Well, hello. This is actually Arcadian Rhythms podcast number 8.
Actually.
7B.
You guys suck.
Evolves into 8.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's not 7B, I guess. Okay. Start again, I think. Oh, man. I completely knocked me off my stride.
Arcadian Rhythms.
Welcome to Arcadian Rhythms podcast number 8. This is going to be predominantly about Walking Dead. In the previous podcast, we basically talked about our 2012 picks, and we kind of left it on a bit of a cliffhanger where we were starting to talk about Walking Dead, but we thought it'd be way funnier if we just shit all over Far Cry 3 for a bit. And by that point, the podcast had gotten really long, so we didn't really talk about Walking Dead at all. And I would definitely say probably amongst three of us, myself being AJ, I write for Arcadian Rhythms.
I'm Sean. I write for and edit Arcadian Rhythms, and I occasionally pretend to be other people.
And I'm Matthew, aka Potter, and I am an honorary editor for Arcadian Rhythms and reader as well.
But yeah, we're all pretty much in agreement, although some of us to a lesser extent, that the storytelling in games has vastly improved over the last, I'd even say last year or two. And I think Walking Dead is probably one of the most mainstream examples of that. I think there's definitely a case for Analog: A Hate Story, probably even Dear Esther. Some of those other games which are much smaller, but were very, very focused on delivering the story over gameplay. Mm. But I think Walking Dead, I don't think anyone expected to be quite as big as it was, but it did blow up quite massively and ended up being a AAA. I mean, you had the guys who made Walking Dead showing up on Spike TV's awards to accept award for like best game of the year.
Awesome.
And for a game that has very little gameplay in it, to be put there above Mass Effect and Far Cry 3 and other such luminaries of last year is really heartening, I think.
I wouldn't say it had so little gameplay.
Mm.
I think it was just very a different approach to the gameplay.
Okay.
In The Walking Dead.
I would say if you looked at systems and mechanics, there are systems because you have to think about where in which they talk and how when you talk to people it affects different places. Mm-hmm. There are systems underneath it. But in terms of mechanics, there's very limited mechanics in that
very
game.
Very basic. Well, and limited, yeah. Same difference, I suppose.
I'd say that
intentionally,
I'd say that it's probably most fair to say that there's an awful lot going on in The Walking Dead, but the way in which you physically and I get maybe functionally interact with it is limited compared to how you engage with the game in terms of emotional and intellectual involvement. I am wearing my wank hat right now. I do apologise.
I'm glad you said that for me.
Someone's gonna take the bullet.
It's like comparing Monkey Island 2 to Horace Goes Skiing. It's a completely different era of game. But if you did, you may say that Horace Goes Skiing has a lot more gameplay going for it. But like any good point and click adventure game, even though The Walking Dead is not a point and click, essentially. It is, but it isn't. Like any good
game. And I think actually when it does become a point-and-click game is when it's at its weakest, personally.
Oh, interesting.
Disagree. What I might just quickly interject with is to say that this is a podcast dedicated to the Walking Dead series, and because of the nature of the game, we are inevitably going to stray very, very heavily into spoiler territory. So if you've not played The Walking Dead, all 5 episodes... in the first series, because they have now announced a second. If you are planning to play it,
don't listen to this.
Mm. Please come back and join us after you've played the game, because you'll find this discussion engaging, because the story is so engaging.
Yeah, and then I mean, there was some debate before we got into this about actually not doing any spoilers in The Walking Dead, but unfortunately, due to the nature of the game, to try and actually really talk about it, we have to start talking about specific events within each of the episodes and actually talking about characters and where they go. So we did give it some consideration into trying to do a spoiler-free one, but it's impossible. And also, one person, you know, we start talking about something that happens 5 minutes into the first episode and someone will get angry and go, oh, you're spoiling it. So this is going to be heavy, heavy amounts of spoiling.
We've also very deliberately avoided spoiling each other because The Walking Dead involves divergent narratives to a point. So each playthrough is going to be different depending on certain choices that you've made and the consequences of that and the way that that plays out. So we don't necessarily know very much about the way each of our individual games played out compared to each other. So there are probably going to be a few surprises there as well.
I believe so, yeah. We started talking quite holistically already about the idea of this game is a point and click and then it's kind of just a narrative game. And Potter's already disagreeing with me. He thinks actually the point and click bits are awesome and the best bit in the game.
I really liked, yeah. I thought they were very well designed in the sense that especially during combat scenes where you're on a sort of timer to interact.
But those are essentially quick time events.
No. Well,
They're well placed. They're well put together.
A lot of them have options. So
okay, so
wouldn't have the choice.
To bring up the biggest spoiler, what we're talking about is episode one when you have to pick between Carly and Doug. Is that one of the things that you would say?
Not exactly what it was, but that is, I guess, an example-ish. Yeah. But yeah. I meant more. Sometimes you can, in a couple of, I can't remember which episodes, but in a couple of scenes, you have a choice of what to do with a zombie that's approaching you.
Those feel a little bit like quick time events, except you have to move the cursor to point at its head and then stomp on it.
Or you can call for someone to throw you a gun or something like that. Maybe not a gun.
Call in an airstrike, maybe?
Yeah, call in an airstrike.
I missed that. This is really divergent narrative here. That's interesting. When did you end up on a military base? When did this become Saints Row the Third?
I guess you're right. That it's sort of a quick time event because you are on a timer and
you have to press a specific button to
quickly
yeah. in time for the event to happen.
Yeah, in quick time.
Yeah, the actual program QuickTime. Like you have to open it up and run QuickTime.
Yeah, you don't have to do that.
And then it crashes, and Windows error recording marks that as an event. God, yeah. That's the
and then it pops up an automatic update reminder on your Xbox forever or Windows.
And then you fill up the cache, and then it basically deletes all of the updates, patches that's been in the game for like the last 10 years, and then you can't play Dark Souls. Because it puts a patch on your save but then deletes the patch, and so then your game and your save are incompatible and you can't use
this,
it.
This actually leads me on to one of my criticisms of The Walking Dead. Bizarrely.
Is it the bit where you have to optimise your window setup?
It's not, no. It's the save and, well, loading system specifically. Mm. On every time I got one of the new episodes and I had it downloaded and I went into boot up episode one. If I tried to, I'd select a storage device on the Xbox 360, so I have my save data from the last Walking Dead episode. But every time I tried to continue, it would say, are you sure you want to start afresh and have random decisions made for you for the last episode?
What?
I had no idea, but it happened like on every subsequent episode.
See, I'm the luckiest.
I'm not sure why.
See, I thing is, I know about people who had their save data corrupted. I've had people who the episodes disappeared for them after they downloaded, and then it put them in different places. I've heard tons and tons of bugs, and I didn't encounter anything.
I haven't heard of any of those.
Yeah, so I got really lucky, but I know people who play through to episode 4. And then downloaded episode 5 and it corrupted their save data.
That's
and they
really
had to start
bad.
From episode 1.
I'm glad that didn't happen to me. Yeah. I mean, in the end, I could restart the game and go back in, and then it would pick up that I had save data already and load it correctly.
Well, I didn't even encounter anything that bad. But I'm moving. Let's not talk about the actual mechanical, actual real bugs that fucked up stuff. What I wanted to talk about is where I think the point and click stuff actually failed, and where I actually think it's the weakest, and I was glad when they started moving away from that. Because if you look at the mood, like episode 1 and 2, have a lot of puzzles, actual, you know, get this item, do this. Like, early on, they're like, you have to unlock the shutters and pick up a brick and throw the brick to smash the glass to attract all the zombies towards the TV.
Oh, yeah.
Which essentially is fine, like, it's an okay puzzle, but and it kind of makes sense. But the thing is, if you don't figure out where the brick is, you, when you break open the lock on the shutter, you can then walk back into the shop, wander around the shop for ages, come back, and there's still a gap in the shutter. And later on, the zombies attack you and they break through, and it's like, well, that shutter's been open potentially for like 2 hours in my game while I've been wandering around doing other things. And so those point and click puzzles break the immersion of the game for me, because they are overtly puzzly in that sense. But also they can't go back to before the puzzle started, because it would also not make sense. And so I think those point and click are actually the weakest parts. Where it tries to be gamey is where it breaks it. Worse is in
they could have gone back to where the puzzle started. No, because
he snaps the lock to open up the shutter. So for the lock to go back on the shutter afterwards would make sense.
I see.
So essentially, but again, from a worldview, you snap the lock, right? But you don't figure out you have to throw the brick through the glass. But then you're like, oh, okay, whatever. I'm just going to walk back into the shop. You're in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. You would never do that. Mm-hmm. You would try and think of some way to reinforce that shutter, but because it's part of a puzzle, that doesn't happen. And so when they steered away from that in 3, 4, and 5, where they did a lot less of that kind of stuff, it made me a lot happier that they went with what was strong about that. But more that bothered me, and I just really want to bring this up now, is in episode 2, they get to go to after the climax of episode 1, where they run away from the pharmacy and they end up in this motel. They meet these two guys and they end up going to a farm, and the farm is protected by an electric fence all the way around the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's one scene where they start building up to the big reveal of what happens in episode 2, which I guess we'll talk a bit more about the story. But they're building up to this reveal, and there's something in the back of the barn which you can't get to, and you keep trying to get into it, but this brother, who's one of the guys who runs the farm, stops you from doing it. So then there's a puzzle where what you have to do is disable the motor that turns the electricity off for the entire perimeter of the farm. And if you disable it, he comes in and turns it back on again. And then you disable it, and he'll turn it back on again. At no point does he go, wait a minute, why the fuck does this keep happening? And why are you standing right there when it happens? And that part, I'll allow that, because they have to allow you to reattempt the puzzle until you get it right. But here's my problem. Why, in a zombie apocalypse, are you using a distraction, which is the only thing that's stopping all the zombies getting in to where you...
Really good point. I never thought of it like that.
And he put, because the thing is, what you do to solve that puzzle is you pull the actual belt off the generator. Mm-hmm. So even when he comes back, he can't fix it because you hide the belt. So he cannot turn the power on.
So you're basically
you're killing them all just so you could have a look at what's in the back of the barn.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I was like, you've made a puzzle that is essentially breaking. Something I would never do. I would not go, how do I distract him? I would think of anything else but make it so that every single zombie that's surrounding this place can just walk over the fence and come and attack us. Given that earlier in that same episode, they task with you with going fixing that fence as well to stop things getting in there. That they've even told you, this is important, this fence needs to stay active.
As if it wasn't.
And then you have a puzzle later on.
Clear.
Yeah. And then you have a puzzle later on where you disable, you literally sabotage the only thing that's protecting you.
Yeah, and the exact measurement of fan belt can't be very easy to find anywhere else.
No, not during a zombie apocalypse,
I can think of arguments against that, but on examining them, they're pretty weak. So yeah, I think that's a fair point. That is a moment of narrative weakness, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's when they kept trying to shove puzzles into that game to find reasons for you to wander around to solve these puzzles. I think that was when it was at its weakest, because it eventually exposed it. It was like, this is a game, and it just made no narrative sense. Whereas I think a lot of the actual dialogue that happened was so good in the third and fourth and fifth episode, the where there were almost no puzzles, I'm glad that they realised that those puzzles were not what kept people coming back to the game.
Yeah, I mean, well, that for me was the strongest part of the game, was the dialogue. And specifically the moments where you choose a response to something that someone has said to you, or a conversational breakpoint, because all of the characters in The Walking Dead are very well fleshed out and rounded characters, and they have their own interpersonal dynamics. So a lot of the time your conversational choices aren't responses to a question that's been asked of you. It's do you say nothing, or do you interject into a conversation between other characters? But when these moments appear, they are typically, at least at the points where the choices that you make matter, it's on a timer. And so if you don't choose a response and the game assumes that you say nothing, you also have the option to select saying nothing. But the other choices that you can make will change other characters' attitude towards you, and in certain situations, I think, affect the events that immediately follow, like what yourself and your fellow survivors do. And I think that those moments of choice are the biggest joy of the game, because they are moments which draw you into the narrative, which is far and away the most engaging part of The Walking Dead. And having to make a very quick decision about what you say, and by extension what you might do, is something, the best way of engaging.
It's something they actually, I think, they stole from Alpha Protocol. Of all the things. Yeah, because Alpha Protocol was the first game I noticed where there was a timer for responding to everything. And that, I think, was a really... Of all the little innovative stuff that Alpha Protocol did, I think that was a really, at least a good thing mechanically for Walking Dead to take. Because, I mean, early on, there's a scene in episode one where Kenny, who ends up being one of the characters you see throughout the entire five episodes, and some really horrible shit happens to Kenny. In The Walking Dead. Sorry, yeah, moving on. We're not going to talk about Alpha Protocol anymore. I'd rather not. I respect it, but I don't like it as a game.
Walker is happy that you talked about it, so that's something.
Yes. But anyway, Kenny, you've basically driven to the main character's hometown, and they end up being holed up inside this pharmacy, and Kenny's son, Duck, is...
Annoying?
Annoying, but shook up and bleeding. And one of the other characters, who I forget the name of, who's the father of Lily, who is actually quite a significant character. She's actually a really significant character in the comic books as well. She has a very small but vital part in the comic books, which actually completely changes everything that happens in the comic books. So seeing her story of how she ended up being in the comic books is kind of interesting. Cool. But anyway, her father is accusing Duck of being bitten. And while this is happening, you're trying to keep trying to... Well, it depends on what you're doing. Like, case in point, my girlfriend, she actually, during that entire conversation, just going, "Fuck this guy, Kenny, punch him in the face. He's a dick." The entire time. She was like, "Nope, I'm on Kenny's side. Fuck this guy, who cares?" And whereas me, I was trying to be diplomatic.
Yes.
And I was like, maybe this is a great idea.
It's entertaining watching someone who isn't scared or isn't just someone who's...
instinctually going, just going for it. But the whole time there's a counter going down. So you barely have time to read each of the responses, which reflects perfectly the dynamic of a real argument. You don't have time to just pause there and everyone stare at you and go, "Okay, what are you going to say now?" You have to go, "Oh shit, okay, calm down." And I really like it because, case in point is that because Kenny becomes a main character, but you don't know that yet, if you just say, like, "Yeah, fuck it, Kenny, punch his lights out," Kenny really likes you because you stuck by him. Whereas if you try and be really diplomatic and really don't take either side...
He thinks you're a pussy.
Yeah, and he hates you.
Yeah.
He pretty much hates you. He's like, "You did not stick up for my son." But the whole time, and this is what I thought was genius about it, the whole time, Clementine, who's like this adorable little girl, is trying to go to the bathroom, and she keeps trying to interject into this argument, but you're too busy going, "Look, I'm trying to sort this out," and you're kind of ignoring her. And then she opens up the toilets, and there's a zombie inside. So the whole thing is really, really tense. And it kind of breaks and actually gets worse, because now you've got a physical threat as well as this dialogue. And I thought that was like beautifully paced and really worked really well.
Yeah.
And that was the first sign that this was going to be, they knew how to nail the dialogue, which I think was a really, really good thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Which isn't always the case. I think some of the dialogue they kind of got wrong. And there's a couple of narrative conceits that they use. Namely, I believe it was episode 4 that really bothered me. I think it was episode 4, the girl that you meet, the super tough girl who uses the claw to climb over places. And they try to explain her backstory a little bit about what she's about. And you end up going inside of this facility. And the facility was where all of the able-bodied, the alpha group of this other town, because you've now dislocated to a different town, and they're the alpha group, so they won't have anyone sick or anyone old because they're worried about them turning into zombies. And I don't think they even want kids either.
Yeah, well,
anyone who is at risk of illness, disease, death,
or slowing them down.
Yeah, and so they basically you break into this town ready for a fight, and you can kind of see that this is where this is going to go. But the entire town is now infected. Someone has been bitten or hurt, and they basically end up spreading the disease through the entire town. And so you get into this alpha town, which is supposed to be this, you know, the perfect place where no one's going to grow old or die or any of those other things, and everyone's fucked. But you end up going into this area, and the girl with the hook, like, you're like, all right, okay, this is where her backstory is going to come to fruition, because she knows where certain things are. And you're like, oh, well, that means that this is where you were from. And you get into this this clinic area, and you're like, oh, I found this camera. And again, this is almost like there was a portent to a puzzle here, which is kind of, I had a bit of a problem, and you're trying to figure out what the code is for the safe. But while this is happening, you keep watching these videos, which basically...
You knew it was going to come as well, didn't you? And going. But yeah, it was very predictable at that point, before the
reveal, which is that the doctor has been having an affair with the girl with the hook, basically. And it's like she's been having sex with him to get drugs for her sister, who has got all kinds of problems, and she's trying to hide it. And it's split, and it basically caused a rift. And she essentially kills the doctor, and it's kind of suggested that the doctor turns into a zombie, and the zombie he's the zombie that then spreads the disease through the entirety. Well, it's kind of alluded, but it might not be. But here's my problem with that entire scene. It's over and over again during all of these recordings implied that he'd get in a lot of trouble if any of this got out, that he was having sex with this girl for drugs. And I was like, so why are you recording it?
Yeah, I thought exactly the same thing when that happened.
And I think that was one of like the weak steps of that.
Even say at some point, someone says, or he says on the video, that he's recording for the boss of like the alpha camp.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes absolutely no sense
for them to then be talking entirely.
And just turn it off.
Yeah. Exactly, but even down to the one of the opening bits is him zipping up his trousers.
Yeah,
and it's like, could you not have maybe, I don't know, not had it recording, zipped up your trousers, had the whole conversation?
How did he start it recording when he was
zipping up his trousers? Like he turned around, pressed record, and then went zip.
Yeah, put it on a like short delay timer or whatever.
So yeah, there are some. There are some weak points, like, in that narrative, but I think I've talked about the ones that bothered me the most. And I think it needs to be stressed, though, as well, is that I was hooked on this. I couldn't wait for the next episode. And I think one of the things, though, is, Sean, you played it all, like, you've played them back-to-back, didn't you?
Not quite. I played the first episode maybe a month after it came out. And then I bought a season pass, or whatever they call it, and so the others became available to me as they were released. But it was only actually last month, January, that I played through episodes 2 to 5, but I did play through the 2 to 5 in under a week. But cool. You, Hurry, I think, didn't you play them all back-to-back in the end, or am I getting confused?
No, well, I played them, on release day.
Right, basically.
Okay.
Apart from episode 5, which I waited for... I don't know, I think I was just busy at work or something, or in life in general, or possibly with another game. But I didn't play it for a month or something after release.
Okay.
Until.
All right, because I was going to try and draw a comparison to the idea that because I played them systematically by episode, that maybe I had more time to dwell on each of the events, which is why I'm being so overtly critical.
Well, I think there's actually some truth to that, because I actually feel a little obtuse now because I hadn't picked up on the. Affairs the wrong term, but whatever.
Wow, we've used obtuse twice in as many podcasts. Shit.
But between the character that you meet in episode 4 and the Doctor, I had not actually picked up on the relationship between those two, its specific nature, but looking back on what I'd seen in the game, yes, of course, it's perfectly obvious. But because I was playing them back to back and I was so focused on just the idea of we need to get what we need to survive, to eat, to defend ourselves, to continue the group, that I didn't dwell on these different aspects, these different sort of character backstories, which is my way of defending the fact that I'm a bit thick and didn't notice that. So make that what you will.
I think I had the same experience, and I was going to describe it as just being thick. AJ's always had more of an eye for plot holes, and
generally being a bit of a pedant and picking at things whenever I can. Yes, it's okay.
I was going to put it more positively. You're definitely better at spotting plot holes in games and movies, so.
And generally being confused by things.
Yeah. Whereas I'm just happily cruising along, just with my mouth wide open, dribbling a bit, watching movies and playing games without worrying about any of the.
Sitting in your Robocop chair, absorbing your nutrient paste.
Yeah, indeed.
It's just you and Bruce Willis waiting for your surrogates to show up.
Yep.
Oh, Surrogates, Jesus. Why would you mention that film?
I watched it last week.
So I watched it a year and a half ago and it's dreadful.
I don't know what
it didn't make any sense.
No.
That is one film I did notice. Huge, like, gaping plot.
There's a plot hole, whoever wrote this.
Yeah.
Jesus. See, I have a real fondness for Radha Mitchell and I can't really explain it, but I think it was because she was in... I think she was in Neighbours or something, and I remember.
Oh, that explains it.
Why do so many of your stories come back around to soap operas?
Yeah, are you secretly like?
Well, I think it's because my sister.
Subscriber to Hello Magazine.
Yeah. My sister, who's 4 years. Heat Magazine's good, right? They have some good articles. That's what I read it for.
Of course they do.
You just like the celebrity shame section,
mainly. What's wrong with that?
Despicable human being. Please continue with your opinion.
I think the reason that so much stuff comes back to soap operas is because my sister, who's 4 years younger than me, was really into soap operas, and so it was kind of one of those things where after coming back from school I would always be vegging out and my sister would basically have Home and Away, Neighbours or Hollyoaks on, and so I'd just end up watching them because I really couldn't be bothered to do anything else with my life that was even remotely meaningful. And Radha Mitchell was in either Home and Away. I think it was Neighbours. And I had a real fondness for her story arc, and then she showed up in Pitch Black. And I was like, oh, look, it's you from Neighbours. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. And she's in Surrogates. And so when I saw she was in Surrogates, also there is the problem that she was in a lesbian film with Ali Sheedy, who was the alternative goth girl from A Breakfast Club.
Did you just say lesbian?
Lesbian, yeah. It's right. A South African lesbian.
Yeah.
Lesbian.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Elizabethan.
No.
GQBian.
Yeah, yeah, I've got a real thing for, like, Kate Blanchett with it being an Elizabethan.
Yeah, you will, yeah. Don't we all?
Yeah. No, I think that also, like, I think that also flavours it slightly. I'm sorry. I don't just respect Radha Mitchell as an actress.
So, at this point, we've talked for 25 minutes about The Walking Dead and 5 minutes about shit soap operas.
And Radha Mitchell in specific.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should rein it back into the video game that fans of Arcadian Rhythms are probably interested in.
You never know, Mike might be listening to this and he might be fascinated by the career path that Radha Mitchell has been taking.
It's quite possible.
So, you have your criticisms about The Walking Dead and I share some of them. Not the ones that I didn't notice.
And now I've spoiled it for you.
Yeah. Well,
I have actually ruined some people's childhoods by pointing out massive plot holes in things like Hackers.
In their lives. Oh, right. I see what you
mean. Dude, if someone's childhood revolves around the film Hackers, then it deserves...
Hi, Kenty!
And me. Hackers is the best film in the whole world ever when you're, like, that age.
Stupid.
Yeah, when you're stupid and 18, 19 sort of years old.
21,
and you're
30.
Like, this is so cool. They're going on about 28.8K motors. And, like, it's proper hacking movie. And they're so cool. They rollerblade.
If you were able to discern from regular silence the lack of words that I spoke in the last 20 seconds... That is the sound of my respect to friends declining very rapidly.
Are they still friends?
They've. I've come to regard them as people I met.
Song in it. You're gonna take the Ron Swanson. I'll be bringing back the Ron Swanson. They are people that I have known for a while. They like Hackers. I may not know them for much longer.
So anyway, back on track to
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I definitely poked too many holes in some of the stuff, but I hope that's counterbalanced with the fact that I thought the pacing of the argument in episode one was fantastic, and then there was a genuine affection that I grew to have for both Lee and Clementine, who are the main two characters in the game, but even the characters that I kind of didn't like as much, I still appreciated. Like, I think Kenny is a bit of a douche bag.
I mean, well, they the way that they've designed the character, you know, mullet, baseball cap, cheap clothes, Hanna-Barbera moustache.
Hanna-Barbera moustache.
Hanna-Barbarian. It's a sequel to Xena.
Oh, it's Hannah Montana when she's grown up.
Hannah Montana. But yeah, they set him up to look like a stereotypical redneck, I suppose. And he's a very hot-blooded character. He very quickly gets angry. In debates, it's very much you're with him or you're against him. For him, things are very black and white and cut and dried. But I mean, that's his character, and that's consistently maintained throughout. And I mean, towards the end, I think that there might be some ways in which he becomes a little bit less like that, and so there is a bit of character development there for him. But yeah, I mean, that's the nature of Kenny.
I mean, the game and the story breaks him.
Big time, understandably.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is probably the character that suffers the most.
Without dying.
Unless you include dying horribly and being eaten alive by zombies. I mean, that's quite shitty, but... I don't know, I've never gone through it, might be alright.
I cut you off when you were about to say something.
I was going to come back to what you said earlier, actually, about the decision in that argument, where if you take the diplomatic option, Kenny actually doesn't... It makes him dislike you a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, and I hadn't realised, like, because I've been plowing through the game, taking, like, diplomatic options in those sorts of arguments, I thought, well, Kenny must be sort of alright with me, like, neutral or something with me. And towards the end of the game, he hated me so much, and he kept blaming me for, like, not rescuing Doc, his son.
Yeah.
And I was really mystified about that, but...
Now that Sean's kind of pointed it out, he is a very black and white character. He's, like, an all or nothing.
Yeah, it probably was showing me, like, Kenny doesn't respect you as much when I made decisions. Yeah. But it just didn't register for whatever reason at the time, so I was really shocked later on. But that is an interesting sort of, because that is like real human behaviour in a way, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
You can piss someone off without ever intending to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, not noticing that they were saying hi to you when you were really, really hungover, like 15 years ago.
Yeah, indeed.
We didn't record this part, but I got to enjoy the story of how AJ and Harry got to know each other. And it's a wonder that they ever did. But somehow, fate persevered.
And we've been best friends ever since.
The hand of God is a mysterious thing.
This is true.
We genuinely have been best friends ever since, so...
Yeah.
I'd like to add, just in case.
There's a happier story for us than for poor old Kenny, who... Well, this is the thing, is like...
I was quite angry with him in the end, actually, for being so pissed off with me.
Well, I've got to say that I think I had a very similar trajectory through the games to what you did. I mean, I also adopted a pretty diplomatic, conciliatory approach to many conversations.
But you
alluded to an event that took place, which was that you chose not to save his son. At that moment...
Wait, it's not like I chose not to save his son. Mm. It's that I chose to save Clementine. Sean. What's it, Sean?
Isn't there a guy called Sean
who's the hell is Sean?
Yeah, it's
Herschel's son.
In the first episode, after you've escaped the initial area, you meet a couple of guys. They take you back to a farm, which is the Herschel farm. And there is, I think this is actually the first binary decision that you're pushed into making in the game, which is that at the exact same moment, a zombie breaks through a fence and grabs this little boy, Duck, Kenny's son, who's sat on a tractor, and at the same time, the son of the owner of this farm, Herschel, is grabbed out by another zombie. And you've basically only got time to help one of them. Or, I suppose, if you fail to make a decision, you help neither and you're an idiot. You suck. How are you going to survive a zombie apocalypse? But, I mean, when I played the game, I chose to go for Duck because I just kind of made a snap decision. Irrespective of what I think of these characters, I'm going to try and help the child. Because that just seems to me the thing to do.
Morally wholesome?
Well, I was role-playing someone morally wholesome.
Did you
try and help out the
guy? You've actually triggered an interesting memory because obviously I'd safe scummed all the way through this game.
Oh,
like I
sorry.
I was going to bring this up later.
This is over. This conversation, I'm leaving.
Man, this is XCOM all over again.
I shot myself
in
the foot.
I hope you did shoot. Did you actually shoot yourself in the foot?
No, but
you should have.
Yeah, the secret third decision.
I've realised why he hates me so much later on in the game. Because
you went for Sean.
Well, initially, like, during my initial playthrough of that, I went for the kid to save him. And then I think after a while, you save the kid and hand him over.
No, if you go for Sean, Kenny runs over, saves Duck while you're trying to help Sean. Mm-mm. And Sean gets killed by a zombie anyway.
Yeah, I know that, because I've... try and buy him because I save scums, obviously. Probably know it better than you two. different outcomes. But I initially tried to save the kid, Duck, and noticed that just takes one turn. And if you try and save the kid, then you switch over to Sean and start trying to save him, and he gets eaten by zombies. So at that point, I was like, oh, I want to reload. Because I reckon maybe there's a way to save his son, Herschel's son.
Okay.
So I reloaded.
Actually, do you want to... Okay, yeah, sorry.
And then I saw Kenny come along and, like, rescue Duck himself. And I was like, well, didn't need to then, did I?
okay, obviously we're kind of leading up to...
And you can't save Herschel's son. There's no way to...
I know that. But also I only knew that because... in the comic book, Herschel's son is already dead. By the time you meet Herschel in the comic book, his son and his wife are already locked up inside the barn. Spoilers for the comic book, sorry.
And the TV series.
Yeah, it only came out 6 years ago.
But the thing
is,
he does have
a son left in the
TV series. No, he has several kids, but it is also the same thing. But no, his son, Sean, is already dead, because he mentions it in the comic book. But yeah, don't go in the barn.
so that's enough about Sean of the Dead.
Yes. But actually, what's really funny is because I actually tried to save Sean, and not Duck, because Duck was already irritating the fuck out of me. But I'd only spoken to him like twice. And you know how I am, I intend to make snap judgments about people's personalities based on the first few things they say to me.
Even if they're like 8 years old.
Yes. Like, fuck you, you deserve to die.
In this case, you were right. Yeah. I feel. Yeah. Duck was thoroughly annoying.
But anyway, so I tried to rescue Sean. And then I basically, in the argument between the Lily's dad, which happens later in that episode in the pharmacy, where Clementine gets attacked by the zombie in the toilet, I again tried to stay very back, as I mentioned. Somehow, Kenny still really liked me by the end of the thing. Due to a bunch of other decisions I made later on, where I sided... Because I basically came to a realisation about Kenny's personality, and I was like, every time Kenny's in an argument, I need to very clearly pick my sides.
Mm.
And I wasn't quite gaming it, I wasn't kind of treating it as a game, but I was sort of role-playing into, I need to now, like, draw the line. Yeah. I need to decide if I'm going to be on Kenny's side, or if I'm going to be on Lily. Lily is the old
When
man's.
You say later on, do you mean episode 4 and 5?
No, I mean episode, pretty much from episode 2 onwards.
You were like...
I've got to stick, either be with this guy, or could be completely against this guy, and mm-hmm. I cannot keep hedging my bets.
Yeah.
And I was like, he got me out of that place, he drove me out of the farm, He's backed me up. He rescues me at the end of episode 1. He literally takes out a zombie and pulls me back in, even though he resents me for not trying to rescue his son. And I'm like, I'm going to stick with this guy, even though I don't agree with everything that he says.
Mm.
I kind of got to that point where if I have to pick a side, I'm going to pick Kenny's. Which is what results... I was quite mercenary about this. Okay, there's spoilers. Right at the end, we mentioned this very briefly when we were talking about QuickTime events. There's two characters you meet right at the beginning in episode 1. There's Carly and Doug. Carly is a reporter who is unable to figure out how to put batteries into the back of radios. Okay, I have to tell the story, and she's going to hate me for this. But basically, my girlfriend...
No, it's okay, because Carly's dead now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, sorry, you can say.
But yeah, my girlfriend started playing Walking Dead recently, and she started doing that puzzle, and then when she saw that Carly hadn't put the batteries in the right way into the back of the radio, she was like, oh, come on, this is bullshit! Unfortunately, that very same day... We had just come back from holiday, and she tried to plug in her laptop, and then stared blankly at the laptop because it wouldn't turn on, and she freaked out. I came in as she was in the middle of freaking out, and I was like, oh god, because the laptop had been sitting in my room for a good month or so, and I was worried it may be broken, maybe condensation or something had got into it. I was like, oh no, this is terrible. And so she's full and throws about to freak out, because she tensed up, went really quiet. Of like, oh god. I didn't say this, but I was in my head, I was like, don't worry, there's no light on your laptop, which means the charger's a problem. So I went and looked at the charger. She plugged the charger in, but not flipped the on switch on the socket. So she was like, this is bullshit! This battery thing, what? Women are stupid and they don't know how to... And I was like, you did forget to turn your laptop on today. Only today.
Bless. At least that was a little bit more complicated.
just saying. And she was like, fuck you. And I was like, I'm just, well, you know.
To be fair, I sort of share your girlfriend's opinion on that scene, because I found it a little bit sexist.
Yeah, I did find it a bit sexist until I witnessed my girlfriend not being able to plug in her laptop, and at which point, all sexism, and I was like, no, just sometimes people are stupid. I'm not saying women are stupid, I'm just saying people are sometimes stupid.
Yeah, definitely
stupid.
People. You remind me of whenever I come around your house to game, not being able to, like, figure out. Even though I've synced a controller to an Xbox 360, like, millions or hundreds of times, probably. I'm always struggling a bit at your house
classic moment of when I asked you to help me build a PC when we lived together a lot way back in the day. And I'll never forget this, because I learned never to talk tech to anyone who knows things. I don't know a lot about computers, but I turned around to Potter and I was like, so how do you plug the TV into the hard drive? And
and
just Potter just gave me this look of like, really? And I was like, you know, the thing into the thing. And
I just won't connect the magical picture device to the magical magnetized power box. Sort of
and you were like, do you mean the screen into the computer? You mean the screen into the computer? And I was like, yeah, that thing. And you were like, oh. I've never... Now whenever I talk to IT, I literally go, I do not know what I'm talking about. I'm just going to put that out as a prerequisite right there now. It's like, I do not know what I'm saying. Please do not condescend me. I or you can, but please understand that I do not know what I'm talking about. Now let's go.
I think everyone who doesn't know what they're talking about should have to say that to IT departments as a disclaimer.
Yeah. You don't get treated any better by the IT department. They still treat you like a fucking moron.
Yeah, but even if you know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like, when I speak to my IT department, I know what I'm doing and what they're going to ask me to do, but they still treat me like a moron. I even tell them sometimes, you don't need to treat me like a moron. Like, I actually know it's as much as you do.
Do you tell them you're pretty good at games?
Yeah, I tell them I'm really good at IT. Do you know,
one of the reasons why they might talk to you...
It.
Oh, God. So you guys work in the department of John Carpenter's The Thing, right? Oh, no, sorry, you're Stephen King. My apologies.
I didn't get my film references right.
But no, I think one of the reasons why they might talk to you like an idiot is because you go up to them and you say, I basically know how to do your job.
I'm not as arrogant as that.
You should be.
I try and make it as clear as possible that they know more than me and I know that. But I know enough to get by,
in
a zombie apocalypse, which brings us back to the Walking Dead.
But anyway, really early on, you meet Carly and Doug, and Carly doesn't know how to use batteries, and Doug's a bit weird. But right at the end of episode one, you have to make a choice between saving Carly or saving Doug. Or, if you're my girlfriend, you think you can only save Doug because you don't see the icon that means you can save Carly. So she turned around to me and went, so it plays out exactly the same way. I was like, no, there was an icon to say, really? Oh, well, fuck her anyway. She can't put batteries in a radio. Fuck her. Who did you pick? Who did you guys pick?
You know, I don't know who Sean picked. But
I think I can guess who you picked.
I picked the intelligent reporter.
Who you totally appreciated for her mind.
Who could be female or male, but was female. And was quite... She was sort of coming onto my character, so...
Really? Because it's implied that she kind of likes Doug in that final scene, where she wants to tell Doug something.
Perfect. See? So leaving him to die.
Zombie apocalypse. Get on the reverse. Jesus Christ.
Who did you pick, Sean?
I also picked Carly.
What were your reasons?
basically the same thing. I actually felt that I had more of a character connection with Carly. Doug felt like a non-entity to me. And I guess that's because I think back on Carly's backstory and it's like, oh, she was a reporter. She saw all this shit go down when the zombie outbreak happened. I think back to Doug, I can't remember anything about his character particularly, except that he was seemed like kind of a nice guy. And also, as a byproduct of the aforementioned battery puzzle, I spent a lot of time talking to Carly because I was just wandering around clicking on stuff trying to find the goddamn fucking batteries. So I spent a lot of time talking to Carly, so that probably also fed into the fact that I, you know, regarded her as a more memorable character than Doug.
Maybe they wrote it like that on purpose, intentionally. Don't know why they would.
Well, yeah, because both the puzzles revolving around Doug and Carly do actually, you have to spend a lot of time doing them, figuring them out, so you do have to talk to them quite a lot.
Yeah, but Doug only has one, a very short piece of dialogue, so I remember speaking to him multiple times. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean...
He's crouched outside.
There is probably an equivalent amount of dialogue for Doug, but I think it seems like less, because the puzzle involving Doug, I solved a lot more quickly.
Really?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I mean, it was technically, I suppose, thinking back on the elements, a more complicated puzzle, but with Carly's one, it was just a case of I didn't know where to find objects, so I spent a lot of time wandering around areas, not knowing which area I should be looking in, and so because of that, it expanded in my mind into a more engaged character relationship.
Didn't Doug's puzzle involve the brick?
Yeah.
As well?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sure, well, somehow...
Please bear in mind that I have now played through episode one twice. Once myself, and once observing my girlfriend playing it. So...
I don't think you can count that as a playthrough of your own.
No, but what I mean is I was sitting there witnessing the breakdown of that puzzle. You know when I said when you opened the shutter? I didn't have that on my playthrough. I opened the shutter, found the brick, and threw the brick through the window, no problem. But I watched my girlfriend play it, and her miss the brick entirely, go back inside, talk to Doug, go back out.
Oh, that's what you're referring out, and, to, really.
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
Just but, bear in mind, that puzzle shot by...
But some part, I can't remember which part of the puzzle now with Doug, but it took me ages to figure out. Just one leg of it, one step. Annoying that I can't figure out which part. It might have been the brick as well.
Was it the TV remote that you have to turn on the screens with?
Maybe, yeah, I think it
and
was.
And he figures out the TV remote, and yeah.
Yeah, because I think there's some way you can show it to him, and he's like, no, that won't be any use.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point, it's a bit misleading.
And then, so I just thought, oh, well, that TV remote's no good here, in this situation with Doug.
Yeah, yeah, I do recall that being slightly puzzling, the fact that, is it that there are two ways to interact with him, or is it just another trigger?
Didn't he have to first put the cursor over the TV shop window?
Yeah.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like we're quite obscure.
We're getting into mechanical spoilers.
Well,
a bit
no, but
much.
This was the dialogue spoiler as well, in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are a couple of things throughout the game like that. Not only a couple, luckily.
Yeah, but it's because they moved away from doing a lot of puzzles and moved more into just having dialogue geared towards moving the story along.
Mm.
It's actually really funny that both of you chose Carly because I picked Doug. And you guys are bastards. Because Doug
you were
is a
one of
sweet
the small
kind.
Minorities.
I know, I was one of the 8% or something that picked Doug.
Oh.
I picked Doug because I like Doug.
Occupy Walking Dead. Damn, we're 8%.
But actually, I like Doug, but there was actually a much more mercenary reason. And it's also what forced me to side with Kenny as well. Because Carly reveals very early on that she knows Lee's history.
I was going to ask about that. I couldn't remember if it happened before that point or not.
Yeah, she reveals that she knows that you're a murderer, that Lee's a murderer, and that she knows what happened to you.
But then you want to keep her sweet.
If she's dead, she can't...
She might tell.
No, that's not how it works.
Oh, wait, yeah, because she'd be dead. So,
I've been playing video games for so long, man.
In her dying words,
dead,
Lee
alive.
Was a murderer.
Yeah, she might, you know, have another life.
It's made out of people.
but yeah, no, I actually, in that split second, I was like, Carly knows all about me, and I've been keeping, because I actually, there's a, Herschel gets really angry with you if you lie to him, by the way. Did you guys lie to Herschel in episode one?
Unintentionally, I believe I did. I thought I was telling him the truth, because of one of the,
I was going to say that I didn't lie to Herschel, but one of the bugs that I ran into the game, the fact that I chose at every juncture to not lie, but despite that, at one point, a piece of dialogue nonetheless happened in which I was referred to as Clementine's father, which was one of only two significant bugs that I encountered in Walking Dead.
Well, Herschel berated me for lying, but I actually, he said, you've got to be really honest with people, and I was not honest with anyone in that game. I kept my cards very close to me at all times.
But were you honest with him or not honest with him?
I was completely dishonest with him.
Oh, so about the your character's history?
Yeah, 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 completely did not. I did not tell him, and so he was really angry. But then when Carly says, I know all about you, and then there's that scene, I was like, kind of gonna let her die.
So you killed her. You chose to kill her. You didn't choose to save one of them. You chose to kill
Doug. Yeah. I liked Doug more. I liked Doug more, and I was already going to choose him, but she swayed my decision by being, if she dies, then there's no one who knows my history. Problem was, right at the end of episode one, Lily's father, the old curmudgeon who argued with Kenny, Larry.
Oh, yeah.
Admits that he also knows that you're a murderer, and so that's when my story arc changed completely, because in episode two, after you find out what's in the barn, after disabling the electric fence stupidly to let all the zombies in, you get imprisoned because you find out that the family and the farm are cannibals and are eating people, and the fop who they introduce at the beginning of episode two, who's like, hey, I'm your new buddy Mark. And you're like, Mark, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, you're blatantly going to die by the end of this episode, ends up getting his legs hacked off and eaten.
I genuinely thought when he appeared as a character, he was going to, he seemed very believable as a staying
really?
Character.
Because that's not what I thought. I was like, this is a traditional American sitcom stroke drama. Is introduce a character and go, hey, I'm this guy that you have no memory of.
Then they did that with
Duck in episode three.
Duck?
Chuck.
Yeah. Chuck. Chuck.
No, no. They did it with Duck as well in episode 3. They like
no, but Duck had been there since episode 1. So it's
yeah, but they brought his character to the forefront, going, "You're gonna like Duck now."
And oh, I'm like, yeah, oh, no, I realised something was going on a bit more there. Mm. Although I wasn't sure if they were trying to make me like him more or be more irritated.
Okay, here's an example. Like, here's an example. In most TV shows, what they'll do, especially long serialized TV shows where they've had characters who've been in it for staples of time, they'll bring otherwise non-essential characters to the foreground for one episode, so you'll get to know all about them, and then the next episode they'll kill them off. And so Mark and Duck, for me, suffered from that as being, like, really bad TV tropes of, like, introduce guy, you have no, like, long-running attached to him, but they try and build up an attachment to him, and then he's dead by the end of the episode. And with Duck, they're like, you've kind of been annoyed by this kid, and now we're going to try and ingratiate him into
you. But did you not expect then, what's his name, the baseball guy, fraternity sort of jock?
That kid? Yeah. Oh no, I hated him from the beginning.
But I honestly expected him to die, like,
no, but that's the thing, is they set him up over and over and over again for you to not like him, and they kept building that up.
I saved so, him.
But what I mean is they kept doing that, they kept making him a bad guy because they didn't have any villains left. Mm. Because what happens in episode 2 is when you get locked up, Larry starts having an attack. And in that point, that was when I decided I had to put all my cards with Kenny. And that's when I got that moment of being like, alright, I'm just going to have to stick with Kenny now. Because I sided with Kenny and I dropped the big block of stuff on Larry's head and killed him. Partly because Larry was the only other person who knew that I was a murderer as well.
So you really did just go through the game, killing, choosing to kill people. Wow.
A little bit, yeah.
That's
and lying to everyone as well.
Pretty sick, man.
Lying to everyone except for Clementine.
If gaming reflects our true characters, then I'd be concerned. Luckily, it doesn't usually. So.
I thought that you used a really interesting phrase right then in relation to this game, which was bad guys.
Yeah.
And obviously, I agree that there are characters who are set up to be figures who you can dislike for this reason or that reason. There are numerous instances of this through the game. But, I mean, I regarded it more as this is a broad cast of characters, and they all react to these situations in ways that are true to their existing personalities. And yes, many of them may have been dickheads in some way or another, because, I mean, honestly, who isn't from certain perspectives? But, I mean, they're just people. They're just people. They're all concerned about certain things. They're all worried about certain things. They're all afraid of certain things, and they all cherish certain things. And so I always regarded that throughout, which is partly why in pretty much every moment where it wasn't incredibly obvious that I had to make a binary decision, that I chose a conciliatory diplomatic approach. And I think that reading of the game as something wherein there are no characters who are obvious good guys or bad guys, that they're all just people making decisions, is borne out by the fifth and final episode of Series 1, where you encounter a new character, and I admit that this plot point feels somewhat forced, but basically you end up sitting down with this character who's introduced, and he knows an awful lot about the things that you've done and the things that you've seen, and he turns a lot of things around on you and says, you made these decisions. You produced directly through your actions these consequences. These are the people who died. These are the awful things that happened because of the choices that you made. And I thought that was really interesting because with video games, the player avatar, the main character, tends to sort of be a projection of the player in the sense that no human being in the world, for the most part, human beings don't regard themselves as bad people. Everyone has their reasons for doing what they do, and it's a psychological necessity that people think of themselves as good people. And if you project that perception onto all the other characters, then everyone's just doing what they think is right. God damn it, I've just lost my train of thought.
Well, I understand the idea of the Ben is not a bad person, he's just doing jock kid.
He's cowardly, but I mean that cowardliness as a fundamental aspect of his character informs what he believes to be the right decision to do.
Yeah.
And if he is afraid of being attacked by raiders, then he is going to regard it as the right thing to do to pay them off.
yeah,
quietly so that nothing ever happens, because he's more informed by his fear than some other aspect of his personality.
He explains at some point that he implies or possibly lies about doing it for the group's sake as well in that situation. Yeah, he's worried that the raiders were going to attack the group.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's the phrasing that he uses, definitely.
Yeah. But, he also feels
like he has to do the right thing as well in the end of episode 3. I mean, he picks a really poor time to decide this. The end of episode 3, when Kenny's wife and son are dead Ben decides he's going to take it upon himself to tell Kenny that it was all his fault. And I told Ben, shut the fuck up, Ben. Yeah, and just say mouth the quiet. This is the wrong time.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, you know, I was all about openness in my playthrough, but it's, you know, I was also like, this is just the wrong time. That time is going to get you killed, basically.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be interesting to find out if you said now is the right time, whether he goes ahead and does it.
It would be interesting.
It's quite a bit later on, isn't it?
I think Ben would still stay in the group. Mm. I think, because basically what happens
is... he's fundamental.
You get to a culmination of choices near the end of episode 4, where how you've been treating each of the characters will inform whether they'll come with you and stick by your side.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I don't know with you guys, Kenny was all about coming with me. Omid and the other non-character who show up in the end of episode 3.
Oh, I like those characters quite a lot.
Really? Very
cool.
Yeah.
I didn't like them. They were non-entities to me. I really like that they existed, but they did nothing for me. But I really like the idea of what they expose, because you become so used to a unit. Man, I'm almost going to talk myself around to liking them now. but you get so used to being part of a unit, and in episode 3, they break down that unit. Duck dies, Katya, who's Kenny's wife, dies. Lily, who's Larry's daughter, she runs off. Obviously, Carly or Doug, depending on who you saved, then gets killed. Lily shoots them. Larry dies.
I found that a really striking moment.
Oh, that was brilliant.
That was really unexpected for me.
It was really, really well. That was more powerful than the whole Duck Katya stuff.
Yeah.
Easily.
I think actually that is The Walking Dead is in the milieu of zombie fiction, and actually in that one episode they nail two of the ways in which you can do character deaths, and I think they handle them both very well.
Yeah.
And one of them is the nasty, short, sharp and brutish and entirely unexpected approach, in which a character you regard as a major character is just snuffed out like that.
Mm.
And another is
the slow,
brooding, somber sort of moment.
Yeah.
The funny thing was is that looking back on episode 3, I thought it was one of the weaker episodes until I thought about it more, and then that was the episode in which these incredibly emotionally impactful moments happened.
Because I'd say episode 3 was probably, I would say, was the strongest for me. Mm.
I'd say that it was the strongest in terms of that sort of thing, but in terms of the actual way in which you interact with the game, it was probably the weakest.
The train puzzle is particularly bad.
Indeed.
Actually, yeah, where you've got to force open stuff with the different implements.
That was pretty really annoying. Yeah. That was going back to like more sort of annoying, obvious puzzles where you know from the whole chain of what you're going to need to do, and you realise how long it's going to take.
Walk backwards and click.
And they did that, I guess you weren't exactly saying this earlier, but they were doing that a lot in episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Those puzzles involved a lot of knowing almost immediately what you needed to do.
It's just walking backwards and forwards and doing them.
Finding bits in the game world.
Yeah. I mean, which was your favourite episode then, Sean?
Well, I would probably say episode 5 because, and this does actually go back to what I was talking about earlier, about how human beings like to think of themselves as the good guy, like they're making the right decisions. And episode 5 I thought was interesting because it challenged those ideas. The time you reach episode 5, you're very closely associating yourself with Lee. I mean, by the time that you played through the game, that is your Lee. That Lee is the character who has made the decisions that you have chosen to make. And for a character to then be introduced to directly challenge that, to push all of the choices that you made back into your face and force you to examine them, the consequences that you could not possibly have been aware of at the time that you made the decision, but to push that back in your face. And I thought that is something that is very true, well, to the original comic series on which this game is based, and is also something that is very unusual in gaming, because games typically, but far from exclusively, like to indulge in power fantasies to some degree,
mm-hmm.
where players get to sort of live life the way that they would like to, but aren't necessarily able to. A lot of the time you go into games and you're like, I am going to make all the right decisions. I'm going to be the person I want to be.
And then you say scum. Context.
Then you might say scum, yeah.
It's good,
yeah. Yeah. But I mean, as a corollary to that, another thing that I like about episode 5 is the fact that, and again, this feeds into the power fantasy, you're in a zombie apocalypse. But hey, this is an ongoing game. So obviously I live. And then at the beginning, well, the end of episode 4, your character Lee gets bitten. And throughout episode 5, the effects of that start to take increasing hold.
And I save scum so much through this point, these points. But anyway,
but through episode 5, throughout episodes 1 to 4, you don't really think about the idea that your character might be under threat, you know, that his actual life might be under threat. You're just like, if I just, you know, make the best decisions that I can, I'll get through this. And so will the people that I care about. And episode 5 turns that on its head and forces you to recognise the fact that this is an incredibly appalling situation. This is apocalyptic. There's no guarantee that you're going to come through this. This isn't fucking Fallout 3 or whatever. And over the course of the game, you get slowly weaker and weaker. I mean, obviously it's a video game. There's a story to be told there, and you need to be your capability is not contingent upon the choices that you make.
That's not entirely true.
Okay.
Depending on whether you chop your arm off or not changes your capability.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I chose to chop my arm off.
So I
didn't.
You didn't. Okay.
But it was before I saved scum. After I completed the game, I tried to save scum. That's the beginning of the thing.
But yeah, no, that some of the actions that you can perform, whether you have an arm or not, change some of the outcomes near the end.
Mm.
Like, you're a lot more powerless in the final bits where you're talking to the guy who's revealing all the stuff.
Okay.
If you have no hand. If you do have a hand, there are options you can make that you can't if you have no hand.
The thing going through my head when I was given that decision about cutting my arm off or not, I was like, maybe, without realising how stereotypical it was, or how much of a cliché I was, even, I just thought, maybe they'll find a cure, and, like, it'll be in time to cure him.
Mm.
Not realising, like, in my head, that the chain of thoughts I was having was exactly the type that you're meant to have as a movie zombie.
It's that rationalisation, yeah. You know?
I was like, maybe he'll be the one that's, like, immune to it.
Yeah, if it's someone else, of course, take their arm off, the risk is too great. Yeah, if it's me, maybe they'll find a cure.
Exactly.
Did you have other people with you when this occurred?
Uh-huh.
Okay, because you know that you can still cut your arm off if no one comes with you, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
No Jesus way.
Christ.
Yeah, because Kenny wouldn't cut my arm off, but the woman who I forget the name of, she cuts your arm off.
Every single person except Kenny came with me.
Oh, yeah. Right. Everyone.
Despite the fact that I'd sided with Kenny a lot, he didn't like me, and that's why it goes back to what you were saying earlier about if you're diplomatic and try and pursue a sort of a moderate opinion, Kenny doesn't like you, and I found that really off-putting. But actually, following this discussion, it fits.
Yeah, same.
But anyway, sorry, you were saying about.
But yeah, no, Kenny came with me, but I left Ben behind because Kenny's like, I'm not going anywhere with that fucker. And I was like, yeah.
Too. I got them to make friends in the end.
Thought, well, I'd already got to the point where I decided I was either going to be with Kenny or fight Kenny. And so I was like, no, I'll stick by Kenny. And if he doesn't want Ben to come along, fuck that guy.
Oh, so does that mean you never experienced in your playthrough the scene where Ben falls off a balcony?
Oh, no, that still happens. Because we come back, and that's when the boat's been stolen.
Yeah,
and you find Ben inside the. You find Ben locked up inside the thing, but it's Kenny for you.
Yeah, it was Kenny for me. Like super, super tough Kenny was overwhelmed by a bunch
old
of
people,
octogenarian cancer survivors. Yeah, you're a real tough guy, man.
Yeah.
No wonder your family's dead. That's terrible.
But yeah, no, Kenny won't chop off my arm, and I had to get Omid's pregnant wife to do it instead. And but no, if no one comes with you, you can still chop off your own arm. You can like saw off your own arm.
That's one thing I really liked about that the overall game, actually, is like the level of gore it got
and,
to.
Yeah, the brutality of it is. Yeah. Mm. Cutting that, trying to cut that guy out of the bear trap.
It was just like, they were rare, but, or occasional moments of like complete gore.
Who was it that said in recently in one of our comments threads, they were saying, if you have everything at 11 the entire time, sure it's intense, but it starts to wane. However, if you keep everything at 3 for a really long time, 7 seems a lot. And that's what The Walking Dead did for me a lot of time. A lot of the time you were just coasting along at 2 or 3 and there was tension. Mm. And then it would just all of a sudden just jam it straight up to 11 for a few seconds. Mm. And those moments of cutting your own arm off or, you know, cutting someone out of a bear trap or bludgeoning.
Stick in your mind forever.
Yeah, they're like, oh God. One of my favourite moments was watching my girlfriend play, jumping back to episode 1, there's a zombie at the beginning that you have to fight and beat to death.
Mm.
The zombie dies after 2 hits, by the way, but you can hit the zombie in the head 4 times if you want to. So I hit it twice, because I hit it once, and he went, ugh, and I was like, oh shit, and hit it again. And then went, just for good measure, hit it a third time, and then left it. Whereas my girlfriend went, smash, 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 and just basically just kept pummeling it. Into
surprised me.
Yeah. But anyway, what was your favourite episode?
I find it a bit weird that you have favourite episodes, because I just see the game as a whole
fair enough.
Game.
Mm, yeah,
I've never really thought of it as, like, which was my favourite.
But did you cry from the tears on your face when you came to...
That doesn't make any sense.
You can have tears coming out of other places.
Episode 5, already at the end of the game, as I like to think of it. Yeah, definitely, when I completed it, and after saves coming and realising I can complete it in a different way, and messaging you like emo messages over Xbox Live saying, why can't I complete it in a different way? I realised that The Walking Dead overall is, I think, the game to most...
Man, I thought that most end was emotional. Going somewhere else.
No, it is the only game I can think of and name that emotionally... saddened me so much in a good, and good way. I wasn't sad with the mechanics or anything like that. I was sad with the story.
Yeah, we'll leave that to really. Far Cry 3.
Yeah, indeed.
I think I completely agree with that, because it's very close to something that I thought after playing the first episode, that I wrote down before I realised that we were before we discussed the idea of doing a podcast about The Walking Dead. And it's about the tone of the game. I thought that The Walking Dead was really interesting because it's set in a post-apocalyptic scenario, but unlike pretty much every other post-apocalyptic game that I can think of, it doesn't just say, oh, this is a terribly bleak setting, it's really awful, everyone suffers so much, and then giving you a gun and you kill loads of guys and you gain XP and loot and upgrade your gear and you're like, I'm the fucking badass of this shit. Which is the sort of mindset that leads to so many people thinking that, wow, post-apocalyptic life will be fucking awesome because I can just be the ultimate badass. It's actually more like, this is just dreadful and dreary and difficult and depressing. And it's the first game that I've played which didn't just tell me that something was bleak, it made me feel like it was bleak. Feel like it was miserable and difficult.
I couldn't put it better myself. That's a very, very accurate description.
Yeah, very much agree, I have to say. Yeah. As much as I didn't really like that end character that you actually did like, because I thought he was an absolute fucking MacGuffin of all kinds, like he got thrown in.
I do agree with that. I think that thematically he makes sense, but narratively it was really weird.
I would still say the ending did make me feel pretty grim, and the final reveal is pretty fucking brutal.
Yeah, I think that was from the beginning of episode 5, I was kind of like, I didn't really think about it, but when it happened, I was like, despite not articulating this thought, that's where I knew it was going
to
go.
Yeah, pretty good. Potter's just gone off to the bathroom, so we're going to mean, at least either take a break, but I mean, we're pretty near the end of this anyway, so...
Yeah, I think we'll just have a few wrapping thoughts in a moment, yeah, and that'll be it. And we're back, just to the very end of our discussion of The Walking Dead. I mean, I think we've spent an awful lot of time talking through the game already, and I guess at this point we just want to make some sort of closing comments on it, I suppose, and just sort of wrap things up. Did you have anything that you wanted to sort of throw in, just as a sort of closing thought?
Just that it is one of my top games, maybe the top game of 2012 overall.
Yeah, I'd probably say the Spike TV award for best female voice actress was the Clementine, the girl who played with Clementine, was deserving of winning that award, I think. And it's a damn crying shame that the guy who did Lee didn't get an award as well. Mm. I think it went to someone rubbish like Male Shepherd, got like best male voice actor or something crap like that. But yeah,
Clementine was the first game...
Child
who I've ever not hated from the start. So,
it's very hard to pull off. Mm. It's very hard to pull off a child character in a film.
Yeah,
and when you're reduced down to only being a voice, I was really impressed.
Mm. Me too.
I think that's reasonable. I think there's a point in the game, and I think it's an inevitable thing. But you are presented with what appears like a choice to train Clementine how to use a gun or not. And I chose to show her how to use a gun and went through the subsequent minigame and helped her hit the targets that we were aiming at. And then in the next episode, I think it was, there was a moment where a character introduced in that episode was being attacked by zombies. I was a little too slow to kill the zombie that grabbed her at one point. But then in a cutscene, Clementine shot this thing in the head. And even though I suspect that may have played out the same for every character, it felt like a result of decisions that I've made. And I think that's just an indication of how good the writing in The Walking Dead is, because that ties in something that is inevitable with something that is organic, and it all feels as significant to your experience of the game.
I agree. Agreed.
So thanks, Telltale.
Yeah, it's good look forward there. Look forward to season 2.
Very much.
Yeah, even though I don't think it was anywhere near as divergent as I would have hoped, it's certainly no Witcher 2, but again, what is, I think, yeah, it was a damn fine return to form, I would say. After with Sam and Max, it was nice to see them not go the Jurassic Park route and actually make
I still really want to play Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Okay. I've not heard great things. I guess there is one last thing that I would like to say about The Walking Dead, and it does actually relate to what you just mentioned, AJ. And that is basically that I don't want to replay The Walking Dead. I thought it was fantastic. With a lot of games, you might think that they're amazing and want to immediately replay them. I think for me to replay The Walking Dead would cheapen the game, because it would detract from... it would detract from my experience of the game. The playthrough that I had, that was my Lee. That was the Lee that made the decisions that I would have made. You know, that when those decisions were presented to me, I had 3 seconds to think about them. I wasn't able to sort of make that decision and then come back to it a week later and make a different one.
Or say, have a save and then go back and redo
Just to retaliate a little bit on that, my Lee was my Lee as well.
Yeah, but you decided which Lee was going to be.
My Lee lived in a multi-dimensional world. seriously.
Someone else has been reading Michael fucking Moorcock.
It definitely didn't... in my head, it didn't detract from the gameplay experience for me. Whereas replaying the whole game would detract, I think. Mm. Replaying the whole story.
I
picked the decision that I felt like I'd most want to. Not the decision that would get me the easiest path through the game or anything like that. I picked the decision that I felt Miley after
deciding what check
all the possible choices could be and seeing what the immediate
so outcomes essentially were. What you did is, instead of having a timer on the discussion, you put a timer on, or you took the timer away from every discussion by essentially making the pause.
No, I did more than that.
Let me look this up on YouTube.
But it definitely didn't detract from the experience. It's not the same as, like, if I'd been following a walkthrough, which, that for some bizarre reason, there exist walkthroughs for the game.
Mm. Actually, I did have cause to reference one of those at one point, and that was at the end of the second episode, where you're required to approach someone with a gun to the head of a friendly character. And you have to do it in a certain way, otherwise she shoots you and it's game over.
Oh, wow, because I did that the first attempt and it worked.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a beautiful piece of tension. I can imagine that being ruined by having to restart
it. It was utterly ruined because, basically, the way that your character, Lee, is animated, it looks like he's still walking forward, so the natural instinct is to tap back when she tells you to stop. But if you do any movement at all, she will shoot you, including walking backwards. So it took me a very long time to figure out that I just had to wait until that moment and then do nothing. Mm. And it's not just me, because I genuinely thought that it was a bug, and I looked it up online and there were hordes of people complaining about this problem. In fact, it was getting to the point where there were people complaining about this problem and saying, actually, some Xbox controllers have a latency issue which leads it to have a microscopic amount of movement. Anyway, minor issue. The Walking Dead, fantastic.
Yeah, definitely go out and play it. although, if you're listening to this, you already have, because we've spoiled the shit out of this game.
Yeah, and
you can still play it and enjoy the story, forget everything we've said.
Yeah,
we'll be sending the people round to your house with the red pills from Far Cry 3, so you can explore the nightclub scenes.
Yeah, originally from Far Cry 3.
Yeah, not in The Matrix, ever.
Yeah, not Far Cry 3 definitely doesn't rip off any
games, or films, or anything.
Yeah.
If the men don't turn up at your house, just punch yourself in the head repeatedly.
It'd be fine.
Official advice from Arcadian Rhythms. Thank you.
Not official advice from Arcadian Rhythms.
We can be sued. Don't sue us. I played a free weekend event on Steam.
I have arrived with podcast beer.
Brink beer. It looks like the cover of the game Brink.
Brink, which is a great game.
We were just saying that.
Yes, we were just like how splendid it is.
Yep.
Alright, so we're on episode 7 now, aren't we?
Oh shit, I've just sprayed beer all over my laptop.
Oh. Here, use this glove.
I'll get some tissue.
If it was my laptop, it would be fine, because it gets beer all over it all the time. Admittedly, the shift key doesn't work so well anymore, and A key's not brilliant.
Yeah, I've broken my keyboard by spilling acetol on it. But
what's acetol?
A sort of alcohol.
Why?
Never mind. The reasons are not important. But
really now?
Why did you take your laptop into your meth lab?
Yeah,
it wasn't my laptop. It's just my PC keyboard. But for some reason now,
I love the fact you got louder to try and drown out our questions.
Maybe that's the way to do it. So my voice gets picked up properly.
I'm gonna have to go and Google acetol now and find out what uses.
There are lots of uses for acetol. Nail varnish remover being the main one. But anyway, on my keyboard, the I key works just fine. But if I press shift and I to get a capital I, it doesn't work for some reason.
Okay, that is a bit weird.
Yeah, it's really. But shift and like other letters work, so it's not the shift key that's broken, but like
it's
the
not
connection.
The I key.
Yeah, specifically the capital I combination is like really. And I just realised I could have pressed caps lock rather than, and then just pressed I.
Yeah.
I've been typing like lowercase l in all my emails. I'm hoping that no one noticed.
Oh, that's so good.